excitement, the joy of Christmas. And I hope and pray that you all had joy at your Christmas celebrations. But you know, Christmas also, in some people, leave a strange feeling of sadness. Not everybody, because of different situations in life. Life goes on, people die at the Christmas season. There's always those things in life that bring sadness, even in the days of joy. But after the celebration ends, the frenzy of the preparations, the endless shopping, the events, the guests, the food, the presents, suddenly, boom, it's all over. Everything becomes quiet. Or does it? Because reality sets in. The work week approaches again with a sense of ordinary. Also sometimes comes a quiet peace. The world again becomes steadily alive. Semi-predictable. I mean, that's a big statement. Predicting the worldly things. Semi-predictable. Reliable. No more pulling off financial feats to make Christmas happen in the family. No more worrying that the kids would like their presents. No more losing hours of sleep during last minute putting together and wrapping Christmas presents and preparing for Santa and get the milk and the cookies out. No more super adrenaline filled days. Festivity ridden. Coming into the nighttime, our bodies relax, thankfully, back into their normal rhythm of sleep, whatever normal is. Soon, life will offer its own little bits of excitement, for which, for us, is quite enough. You know, like the old things, like bills to be paid, deadlines to reach, work to be done, errands to complete, fires to put out. I don't know about you, but I think all of our families, sometimes we have a fire that we got to go put out, not physically, spiritually. Managing relationships. Wait to lose. Hallelujah. Wait to lose. Truth to face. For some, the realities of illness or grief or hardship will flood back in as soon as that momentary joy of the day of Christmas has passed. Now, Jesus is our perfect example. He's our model for life. And Jesus' family also had to face a cold reality that would come only after a night of these prominent guests that we call the wise men. Probably been a year, maybe two, that Jesus was born. By now, Joseph had built the three of them a nice little home, and they seem to be well set into their lives in the area of Bethlehem. Their son had been gathering lots of attention. People were curious about this child. When these three magi from the Eastern Kingdom appeared at their door, it was quite a celebration. Staying a night or two as guests, they brought expensive gifts to the child. Jesus reminded his parents of the importance of his life and the light of his messianic prophecies. It was really a neat time to come together and celebrate the birth of the child and share all the things and all the joy. Then they were told something else. They would need to be very, very careful because the child's life was in danger. In fact, his life would be in danger from the time of his birth until the moment of his death on the cross of Calvary. His parents would need to protect the child until he could do so on his own. Joseph, a man of great faith, trusted the dream and the Magi's direction. So, still reeling from the celebration of the day before, they packed up their belongings in the still of the night and headed out of Israel down through the Sinai to Egypt. The family would sojourn there for a few years until Herod the Great's death. They settled somewhere, probably in around Alexandria, Egypt. I was blessed to be able to visit that little town. A lot of people of faith, even in a Muslim so-called country in the area of Alexandria, even to this day. Many Jews had settled there, and Jesus' life was living under the radar, under a shroud of mystery and caution, indiscretion. Herod the Great was a man who loved power more than anything else. He believed that he could be threatened by somebody else trying to take his power. And he became a very wretched man. He was known to be cruel, opportunistic, shrewd, and unpredictable. The slightest unknowing offense could just set him off and cause him to act coldly and murderously. When he heard from the Magi about the Messiah's birth in Bethlehem, he was determined to rid the world of what he saw as an urgent threat to his kingdom. With God's help, the Magi were on to Herod's intent. When they reached Bethlehem, instead of returning to inform Herod, which Herod, come back and tell me what you found, instead of informing Herod the whereabouts of the child, they warned Joseph and Mary to leave Israel and protect the child at all costs. Because Herod had now had no idea where to find this child. He issued a decree that all children ages 2 years and under should be both killed in and around that whole area of Bethlehem. The joy of the Messiah's birth was over. People's hearts dropped into their stomach. That next day, the joy turned into horror as these soldiers invaded their homes, slaughtering their children. In our world today that we live in, I think we can grasp with terror the revulsion sometimes at school shootings, wars, abuse that take place in the lives of babies and children. This event was no different. It was widespread, it was horrific, and it was bloody and brutal. It left parents distraught and Israel stunned. Talk of the Messiah for now has ceased. No more talk about the Messiah. And the fear of Herod's reign was fresh in the hearts of every family. Their hopes lay momentarily dashed on the rocks of their doorsteps as grief filled every home and every street. I think all of us can imagine the brokenness of that time, the brokenness of the world, because we live in a broken world, that God sent his son into, Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah, a time that it was dangerous. It was dangerous power of the rich. It was dangerous power of the politicians, armed, and they could wipe out families at any given moment. When Israel lay subject not only to the forces of Rome, but to their own cruel leaders who ate from Roman's hands and grew drunk on its wine of prestige and power, the likes of Herod and Sadducees and the Pharisees and the religious leaders of the day. It came down to this, and you wonder how God would fight this perversion of power. I can tell you how he did it. He did it with love. Agape love, unconditional love. That's the only thing that power can fight. The only thing that power fears. Most of us sometimes scoff at a simple answer like this. Ha! How come you keep saying about this love, da 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 da? Well, look at the ravages and the crimes in our world today. And feel sometimes that answer about this love thing that you all talk about is too simplistic, too naive. In fact, it's ridiculous to do anything to battle the wars that are raging in our lands and the cultures between people. And yet, none of our answers have ever been sufficient. Oh, we may stop cruel leaders for a time. We did that with Saddam, who was insane, and many others. Power may triumph for a while, in this broken world. Power will always corrupt, and people will always suffer. Only love leads aggression without steam. Only love stops power in its tracks. I think we've all had, at one time in our life, within families or friends or anybody, been in the midst of an argument with somebody, perhaps a partner, perhaps a spouse, a child, or even a friend. And during that exchange, instead of firing back at your opponent, who expects you to fire back and get into a heated conversation, you just stop. You apologize. Throw your arms around them and tell them that you love them. Most likely they'll stop stunned because you've just taken the wind out of their sails. Fury needs fear as fuel. Anger needs participation to fight. Power is like a steam locomotive. We don't have steam locomotives anymore, but there's a lot of places where you can go and experience a steam locomotive, that they still work and how that steam power gets them running. They may be able to keep moving, but the danger has been diffused when you take the steam out of a locomotive. Now, this may not be a quick and immediate fix on things. Some fury trains seem to barrel down at us at 100 miles an hour for a good long time. Stress and pressures in this world are tough. But eventually, the fear will calm. The fire will fade, for power needs fear to function. What do you and I fear in life? Well, love is what we call unconditional love. The Greek word for that is agape love. Love that is given to us without anything in return. It's sort of like a little tiny seed buried in a desert that would take time to emerge. It would need to slowly demonstrate itself, spread, disseminate God's silent, healing power, person by person by person, in an area, by an area, little by little, until when confronted with the powers to be, it would proclaim victory from a bloody cross and change the world with its refusal to die. Nothing can kill unconditional love. I think in the year 2023, or maybe any time in our life, I think it would be good that if we found some space in our heart for grace. God's grace is sufficient. He said in that little prayer, the Lord's Prayer, if you forgive, you'll be forgiven. If you don't forgive, you won't be forgiven. That unconditional love. Find a place in your heart for a little bit of grace. Outside of God's own self, unconditional love is the only invincible thing for this entire world. Jesus' family would protect this gift of love. This healing, the changing, the spirit power, Son of God's gift to the world, until the child would become of age and set out on his own active mission for the Father. You ever notice there's not much that we hear about or talk about, even in the Bible, except of some of the other writings and so forth about Jesus from the time he was 2-3 years old until he was revealed to the world when John the Baptist baptized him and God said, "This is my beloved Son in which I am well pleased." Nothing in between to speak of. His family protected him. As the Son of God, they knew who was among them. And then they went on to this trip to Egypt and then to Nazareth. And they would live very carefully under the radar with the child until he grew into a man that he was to become. Scripture says Jesus grew in wisdom and compassion. So once Jesus set out on this mission that God called him to do, at the age of 30, the countdown to his death would begin. God would have 3 years to accomplish this plan of salvation, to provide an unknowing world with an unconditional gift. But he would be victorious, and he has been victorious. He's broken that bond that Satan held over us. He broke that bond of death. Jesus, at his birth and his life and his death, would come with moments of great joy and also moments of great sorrow. The story of love and life that he inherited comes with the experience of both sorrow and joy. Jesus said, in this world you're going to have trials and tribulation, but fear not, I've overcome the world. But in the end, joy always wins. Love always wins. So today, as we celebrate Holy Communion, as we celebrate the wisdom and the savvy of the wise men who came with God's help to protect this little baby, the Son of God, God's love embedded into a world of pain, we celebrate a new year, 2023, coming up. We celebrate chances for love in the face of pain and give. Just stand in the face of loss with the ability to know that we are overcomers. The whole book of Revelation is all about overcomers. We celebrate the communion, which we will hear in a moment, communion of our spirits with the spirit of love, who calls us still every day of our life out of the brokenness to love in spite of pain, and to teach love and faith and love in the midst of fear and doubt. So when we love, when we teach love, we bring the world a little closer to God. So my prayer for all of us this upcoming year is that year will be full of peace and joy and above all, love, that you can find a little space in your heart for a little bit of grace. We need grace. Thank God Jesus expressed and shared grace